The gospel reading is from the 25th chapter of Matthew, verses 14 through 30. For it is as if a man, going on a journey, summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then he went away. The one who had received the 5 talents went off at once and traded with them and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. Then the one who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and worthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. And the one with the 2 talents came forward, saying, Master, you handed over to me 2 talents. See, I have made 2 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and worthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. Then the one who had received the 1 talent came forward, saying, Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here you have what is yours. But his master replied, You wicked and lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take that talent from him and give it to the one with the 10 talents. For to all those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. The word of the Lord.
I don't know if I've told this story before, but at this stage in the game, I suppose it's kind of inevitable. I might repeat myself once in a while, but it's a good story, important to me, and I'll make a good point out of it. Years ago, a long while back, Trinity was going through some challenges, and therefore I was going through some challenges. And I was kind of getting in a little pity party and wasn't wanting to do much. I felt sorry for myself, all this and that. And I thought, everything outside there is conspiring against me from keeping me from doing what I really want to do as a pastor. But then one day, wise president of this congregation came into my office and essentially told me this. He says, Steve, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done at this church right now. I go, yeah. He says, you're the only pastor here right now. I go, yeah. He says, well, if you want to do this work, now would be the time to do it. Interesting. He reframed that whole situation so beautifully, didn't he? What I thought was the problem was everything out there, people who didn't like me and conditions that were not good, and that they were all defeating me. He twisted around and made it seem what was stopping me from doing all this work that I wanted to do was me and my attitude. It was all in here, my perception, right? And the amazing thing is, where I didn't have confidence and faith in myself, whereas he was able to have it, he could change my view. And I got up off my pity seat and I started doing the work, and I've had the privilege of doing it ever since. Well, with that in mind, let's look at this parable today. It starts out real simple, doesn't it? There's a master who's going to go on a trip, and he does something a little bit unusual. He calls his 3 servants into him, and he walks up to the first one, he pulls out his wallet, he drags out a big chunk of change. Big wad of cash, a lot of money, and he puts it right in his first servant's hand. Right in his hand. No explanation, no instructions, nothing. He He goes to his second servant. He hasn't been with him quite as long. He hasn't exercised as much responsibility. But still, he reaches into his wallet and he pulls out a sizable chunk of change and puts it right in his hands with not a word said. He comes to his third servant. He's younger. He's been there a lesser amount of time. He hasn't had his chance to prove himself so much. But yet, the master reaches a third time into his wallet, pulls out a significant amount of cash, and puts it right in his hands. And he leaves. Well, the first servant is looking at this pile of resources right there that all of a sudden, unexpectedly, is in his hands. And he thinks, I've never been in a situation like this before. I'll probably never be in a situation like this again. What would he be feeling? What would he want to do with that? Well, you remember back when you were learning how to drive? For the longest time, somebody had to be in the passenger side of the car with you, right? Mom or dad, making sure that, oh, you didn't put the blinker on enough. Oh, you're going too fast here. Slow down, all this and that. But then there finally came a day where mom or dad said, here's the keys. You can take the car all on your own. What did you feel? You felt, yes, finally, this is what I wanted. I get to go and do this on my own. I'm going to take those keys and I'm driving out of here, right? You didn't hesitate for a second. Well, that's what this first servant did. He recognized, here is just money, just literally fell into my hands. I'm going to have fun with it. I'm going to do something with it. And he went and used the money. I don't know if he invested it. I don't know if he did a little project, built something, and then sold it for a vast profit. But he doubled his money. And when his master came back, he couldn't wait to come up to his master and show him the money. Look, I doubled it. I doubled it for you. And you can just see this big grin come across the master's face. And he says, well done. You're a good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your master. Enter into the joy. Well, the second slave, it was the same thing, right? He sees this money as an opportunity, as something to have fun with. He goes out, he does something with it. He doubles the money too. And when his master comes back and says, how did things go? He can't wait to pull out all his hard-earned money and present it. You can just feel his pride. And again, his master can't help but smile and say, well done, you good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy. Could it be that simple? Could it really be that simple that God blesses each and every one of us with unexpected gifts and talents and wealth and friends and blessings? He just gives them. We find them in our hands, often without our asking. We just find this love being poured into our lives. And God expects us, out of joy and gratitude and a sense of possibility, to go and do something with it, to share with it, and whatever increase we reap, to share it with God and to be able to know the joy that comes from that. Could it be that simple? Well, apparently not, because there's a third servant, right? He takes his money and he is afraid, isn't he? What if I lose this money? Uh-oh. So he gets a little shovel, digs a hole in the ground, hides the money in there, covers it up. And when the master comes back, he goes and digs the money up. And so when the master comes to him and says, well, how did it go? He takes the money he gave him, the exact amount, puts it back in his hands. And the master goes, what's this? What's this about? And the guy says, there's your money. That's what you gave me. I kept it safe. I gave it back to you. He says, I was afraid because I know that you are a mean person and you like to reap reward where you did not sow. Is that the laziest excuse ever? Of course, every time we have a guilty conscience, we don't come up with good excuses, do we? But boy, this is a lazy, lazy excuse. He tries to shift the blame. He tries to blame the master. He said, I think you are a cruel guy who wants to get something out of nothing. Of course, that's a lie, right? That's a total lie. The master had given him money. He had already sown money into this guy's life. So that was a lie. But the master says, you know, even if I were the kind of jerk that you say I am, which I definitely am not, you should have had the sense to have done something other than just dig a hole and put the money in it. You should have taken it to the bank. At least there it would have been safe and it would have made me a little bit of interest. And he says, here, give me that money. I'll give it to someone who knows how to use this money. 2 points there, huh? What God, the gifts he has given are not going to sit idle. They are intended for use and to bear fruit in this world, and they're going to. The second thing is, when it comes to the life of faith, you can't play it safe. That seems counterintuitive, doesn't it? This guy was trying to be the most safe with the money and just keep it from getting stolen. But he was the risk, he took the biggest risk of all. Why? Because ultimately he lost the money. God wanted it to be used. He wanted it to be shared with others in this world. So we have the two extremes in here. The servants who took the money saw it as an opportunity, took a risk with it, shared it, did something with it in this world, and it bore fruit. And then we have this poor guy who, out of his fear, couldn't do anything. He just dug a hole for it and left it there, and he lost it all. The master was not happy with that. I want to raise the question, just because I think it's interesting and makes a couple good points, is, so what would have happened if one of the servants had taken the money, taken a risk with it, done something with it, but lost it all? What would the master's reaction be? Would he be mad and say, you should have been more careful with it? Or would he have been fine with it? I kind of think he would have been fine with it. The point that the master wanted is that the gifts be shared, that they be used, that they not just be moldering in the ground. I think even if the servant had made mistakes, the master would have been happy that at least he had tried. We've got a story where Jesus talks about this already. It's the parable of the prodigal son. That first son made terrible investments with money, didn't he? But how did it end up for that son? I've got a painting in my church office of the parable of the prodigal son, and there is the son being embraced in love by his father. Even though he had made horrible mistakes with his money, his father still wanted him as part of the family. A while back, I showed that picture to my mother. She was here for a Bible study, and she came in my office, and she looked at it, and she knew it was the parable of the prodigal son. And she stood there quietly for a few minutes looking at it, and all of a sudden she turned to me, and she said, I bet that father is wondering what lesson his son has learned from all this. And I thought, there's a parent's heart, right? There's a parent's heart. Would the master be mad and punish the guy? No. But even more importantly, and here's the other possibility. Why doesn't the parable talk about a servant who used the money but lost it? Well, let me suggest that maybe there's something inherent in the gifts and the blessings of God that when we dare to share them, they will inevitably produce a result, a good result. What if the result is absolutely guaranteed? What if we can't lose? Could it be that simple? Could it be that good a deal? Jesus told another parable about that, didn't he? Jesus said, a sower went out to sow the seed into the world, and some of it fell on bad ground and was trampled underfoot and didn't bear fruit, but all sorts of it fell on good ground and brought forth a harvest. Maybe God trusts the gifts that he gives us more than we do ourselves, knowing that inevitably they can bear fruit. I just got a new book from one of my favorite poets, Mary Oliver, and I think she puts this whole thing beautifully in this little poem. It's called The Gift. She writes, "Be still, my soul, and steadfast. Heaven and earth are both still watching, though time is draining from the clock. And your walk that was confident and quick has become slow. So be slow if you must, but let the heart still play its true part. Love still as once you loved, deeply and without patience. Let God and the world know you are grateful that the gift has been given. I love that image. Let the world and God know that you are grateful and that the gift has been given and that you recognize it as such in your life. Every once in a while, I order something online and have a gift shipped to some of my relatives or friends or something like that. And I'm always worried until I know they get that gift. I'm online tracking it, you know. Where is it? When are they going to get it? Because I want to know that they have received this gift, that they have the joy of it. What if it's the exact same way with God? He's sending blessings and riches and talents and love our way all the time. And he just wants to make sure that we receive the gift and have the courage and the freedom and the faith to share it. And therefore, we all may enter into the joy of our Master. Amen.